Joshua chapter 14 is where we are in our study. And we left off last time talking about Caleb. And you know, in Joshua chapter 14, along about verse number 7, Joshua and Caleb are speaking. And this is Caleb speaking to Joshua, verse 7, 40 years old was I when Moses, servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land. And I brought him word again, as was in my heart. Nevertheless, my brethren that went up with me made the heart of the people melt, but I wholly followed the Lord my God. And Moses sware on that day, saying, surely the land whereon thy feet have trodden shall be thine inheritance and thy children's forever, because thou hast wholly followed the Lord my God. Now behold, the Lord hath kept me alive, as he said, these 45 years, even since the Lord spake this word unto Moses, while the children of Israel wandered in the wilderness. And now, lo, I am this day 85 years old. As yet I am strong this day as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, even so is my strength now for war, both to go out and to come in. And we talked about his patience in that, you know, he didn't get bitter, angry. He didn't let frustrations get the best of him while he was pretty much in a holding pattern, waiting on the wilderness wanderings and such. And he's also been patient in fighting alongside his brethren and during the approximately 5 years of the time of conquest, the initial conquest. There's more to be done. But now we get to the point where he said, all right, I want my inheritance that God promised me. Verse number 12. Now therefore, give me this mountain whereof the Lord spake in that day, for thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there, and the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord hath said. So what you see here in the next thing we see is the God's power to remove the giants. Now, it doesn't specifically say giants here, but thou heardest in that day how the Anakims were there and the cities were great and fenced. If so be the Lord will be with me, then I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said. And Joshua blessed him and gave him to him unto Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, Hebron, for an inheritance. Hebron, therefore, became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, unto this day, because he wholly followed the Lord God of Israel. The name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, which Arba was a great man among the Anakims, and the land had rest from war. What you see here is it's very interesting to me, very intriguing, because Caleb could have claimed seniority. He could have said, you know, Joshua and I are the only ones here that were part of that original generation. We get first pick, so to speak. He could have said, you know, I have put in my time, you know, give me the easy spot, right? And, I mean, from a human standpoint, there's not much leeway to argue that. But he did. What you see here from Caleb not only is faith in God's power, you know, but we also see leadership in Caleb. Because he said, hey, I'll set the example. I'll take the hard spot and I'll trust God's power to help us over here. And if I do this, I think that'll set a good example and give encouragement to others to kind of follow the example here. But really, it's just listed as, in verse 12, the Anakims. But I want to go back and look at it a little bit. Turn back to Numbers chapter 13 with me. Numbers chapter 13. We're going to do a little bit of review this morning. Numbers chapter 13. This is the account of when the spies were sent by Moses to check out the promised land. Okay, and he gave them instructions. See what's what. Verse number 21 of Numbers 13. So they went up, searched the land from the wilderness of Zin to Rehob, as men come to Hamath. And they ascended by the south and came up to Hebron, where Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai, the children of Anak, were. Now Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Now that clears it up, right? Everybody knows when Zoan was built? Yeah, me neither. Okay. But they knew at that point in time. So basically what they're saying is this was a historic city and they knew the timeline. But right here in verse 22, there are three sons of Anak that are named there, Ahiman, Shishai, and Talmai. Anak was the father of the giants. The Anakims, as you see other places, that I-M-S on the end of the word is a plural ending. Okay, you want a little Hebrew lesson, you see the I-M-S on the end of the word, that's probably a masculine plural noun in Hebrew. Aren't you all edified now? Okay. But Anakims is, if I could put it in English terms, it's the Anaks. It's the descendants of Anak. Anak was the father of the giants, but you see here in Numbers 13, it specifically noted that Hebron was occupied, inhabited by three of the sons of Anak and, you know, their descendants. Drop down in the same chapter, when they come back and they start to give their report, starting in verse 26, they start to tell them about all the things that they saw. Verse 32, they brought up an evil report of the land which they'd searched to the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we've gone to search it is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. Now, is that true? Was everybody there men of a great stature? Or did they see one group of big people and get scared? I think it's B and not A, okay? But verse 33, we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants. We were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So, Hebron was listed as a place where they saw the children of Anak. In the report to the congregation, they said, we saw that sons of Anak, the sons of the giants, over there. It's over. We'll never be able to do this. Now, let me just put a parenthetical statement here. Even if it's true, we look like grasshoppers compared to them. Even if that's true, and I'm going to assume for sake of discussion that it is that a problem for God? In fact, God kind of wants us to have that perspective, doesn't he? He wants us to have the perspective that, okay, I can't do this in my own flesh. I can't do this in my own strength. I need God's help. In fact, God spends a lot of time reminding us of that, teaching us those lessons so that we will be dependent on him in circumstances, and then also so God gets the glory when those things get resolved, right? So you have here in Numbers 13 the mention of Anak, but you also see specifically that the sons of Anak were at Hebron, and Hebron is the city that Caleb asked for. Now turn over with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 1. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Deuteronomy. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 1. This, the book Deuteronomy, the name Deuteronomy comes from the Greek name for the book when the Old Testament was translated into Greek, which was in use during the time of Christ because not everybody there was as familiar with the Hebrew language. But the Greek name here means second law. It's from two words. It means second law. And Deuteronomy, for in large part, was the second giving of the law, or the repetition. Okay, Moses knows his time is short, and he's repeating the major points of God's law and points of emphasis from their history and such. But here in Deuteronomy, you have kind of a review. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse number 22, ye came near unto me, every one of you, and said, we will send men to search us the land and bring us word by what way we must go up, what cities we shall come, and the saying pleased me well. And I took 12 men of you, one of every tribe. So you have the review here of the spies. Drop down now to verse number 27. Ye murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, he brought us out of the land of Egypt to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Whither shall we go up? Our brethren have discouraged our hearts, saying, the people is greater and taller than we. The cities are great and walled up to heaven. Moreover, we've seen the sons of the Anakims there. So you have that same theme repeated when Moses is reviewing. How did we get here? Why did we have to spend 40 years in the wilderness? Well, you got discouraged because of the Anakims, the descendants of Anak. Now, turn over, maybe across the page, maybe turn over a page to chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 2. Verse 9, we passed by from our brethren, the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir. Remember, God had told them, to leave Esau's family alone. He wasn't going to give them that part of the land. And he told them to leave the descendants of Lot alone. I'm going to give you other land, but I'm not going to take away the inheritance of Esau and Lot to give to you. So it says, we went around them. The middle of verse 9, through the way of the plain from Elath, from Ezion-Geber, we turned and passed away the side of the wilderness of Moab. Verse 9, the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession, because I've given Ar to the children of Lot for a possession. Okay, so the two descendants of Lot were Moab and Ammon. That's where you get the Moabites and the Ammonites. Verse 10, the Emims dwelt therein in times past, a people many, great and many and tall as the who? Anakims, which were also accounted giants as the Anakims, but the Moabites called them Emims. Okay, drop down to verse 21, same chapter. Well, let's back up. Verse 18, the coast of Moab, when thou comest, verse 19, when thou comest over against the children of Ammon, distress them not. This is the other son of Lot, still dealing with their cousins. He said, I will not give thee the land of the children of Ammon for a possession, because I gave it to Lot. Verse 20, that also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt there in an old time, and the Ammonites called them Zamzamims. If I'm remembering correctly, that one of those two, Emims or Zamzamims, I think it's Zamzamims, means long-necked, like tall like a giraffe, I guess. Verse 21, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims, but the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. As he did to the children of Esau, which dwelt in Seir, when he destroyed the Horims from before them. So here you see the Emims, the Zamzamims, all they were also descendants of Anak. They were also the sons of the giants. But the descendants of Esau had driven them out. The descendants of Lot, the Moabites and Ammonites, in history prior to Israel's arrival out of Egypt, have defeated them. Why am I pointing this out? Number one, it wasn't a new problem. Number two, it was not an insurmountable problem. Okay? It was just, they looked at this problem and freaked out, to use a modern term. That's not in the Hebrew. Okay? But they panicked and said, okay, we're dead. This problem is going to be the end of us. Our life is over. And God, through Moses, saying, no. The children of Esau dealt with these people. The children of Lot, the Moabites and Ammonites dealt with these people. Turn over a couple more pages, if you would, to Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 1. Hear, O Israel, thou art to pass over Jordan this day to go in and possess nations greater and mightier than thyself, cities and great and fenced up to heaven. Obviously, that's figurative, but high walls. Verse 2, a people great and tall, the children of the Anakims, whom thou knowest and of whom thou hast heard say, who can stand before the children of Anak? So that, they had a reputation, right? The children of Anak, the sons of Anak, had a reputation for being fierce, for being powerful, for being, immovable object, so to speak. I mean, today, if you were to think about a group of people, or maybe a group, whether it's military or a subset of the military, if you heard, okay, this group is there, then you're like, okay, I'm not going in there. What would you think of? Anything come to mind? I mean, even if it's the American military, who do you not want to mess with?
Seals.
Yeah, the SEALs. I figured that answer would come up. Okay, the Rangers. What do they call it in the Air Force? Delta Force?
2-4.
Okay. But, each branch of our military, Force Recon is what they call it in Marines. Each branch of our military has their own name for their special forces. I mean, if I heard, okay, this guy is former Force Recon, former SEALs, I'm like, okay, I'm not messing with him. Okay, I know better than to do that. I'm just trying to say we have our own preconceived ideas, right? You might hear, okay, well, this guy was, Israeli Secret Service. Okay, I'm not messing with those dudes. They're highly trained and lethal. I don't want anything to do with that. Whatever it is, I mean, you fill in the blank. But whatever you think of as, okay, that's a group of people, whether it's military or whether, you know, it's just somebody that's, you know, skilled in martial arts and whatever else, you're like, okay, there's no way for me to defeat them. That's the reputation that Anak's descendants had. Okay, you cannot overpower these people. So that got in their head, and instead of saying, okay, we can't overpower these people, but God said he would give it to us, so God's going to have to overpower them, they only looked at themselves, and they panicked and said, well, if there's giants here, then we're toast. Okay, then we turn back to the book of Joshua now. You know, then we get into the book of Joshua. We already read this, but look at Joshua chapter 11. Joshua chapter 11, I mean, we touched on it more than 24 hours ago, so most of us probably need a refresher anyway, right? Joshua chapter 11, this was a summary. Okay, verse 21, at that time came Joshua and cut off the Anakims from the mountains, from Hebron, Debir, Anab, the mountains of Judah. And they left none of the, and there was none of the Anakims left of the children of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and Ashdod. What do we know about those cities at this time in history? I see Doc mouthing it back there. Philistines. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Goliath was of the descendants of Anak. I mean, several generations later. But in summary, they did eventually do that. But Caleb, in chapter 14, said, give me Hebron. You heard the reputation that the sons of Anak are there. And if God's going to do what he said he's going to do, and I believe he will, then God will take care of the sons of Anak. We're going to trust God. We're going to go fight them. And we're going to overcome these giants. I skipped over Deuteronomy chapter 3. But if you remember, before the death of Moses, they fought Sihon and Og. I'm sure all of you had those names on the tip of your tongue. But Og, the Bible says, was a descendant of the giants as well. They're all there. But you see here, when they went into the land, they still fought them. But did God keep his promise? Yes. They were able to take them out. Did they wholly get rid of them? No. I mean, you get down to the time of David. The most famous giant in the Bible was Goliath, right? David fought Goliath. But there are at least four other named giants besides Goliath. And one of them was the brothers of the giants. There's at least four other individually identified during the time of David that, you know, David killed Goliath and David's men killed some of these others. We don't hear as much about them after the time of David. Of course, David, you hear about the Philistines giving Israel a fit until the time of David. And the first half of David's time as king, he really battled with the Philistines, but you don't hear much about it after that. It seems like during the time of David, that really got either wiped out or knocked down to the point of insignificance from a national perspective. But Caleb says, you know, give me Hebron. I mean, to you and me, it's like, okay, name of a city I've never been to. But when Caleb went to Joshua and said, give me Hebron, you've heard the sons of the Anak are there, the Anakims, that was significant. I mean, it would be as significant militarily as somebody saying, oh, okay, the special forces are there. I'll attack that spot. You know, oh, okay, I'm 5'10". Let me go guard Shaquille O'Neal. You know, we're playing 5-on-5. Let me go guard him. It'd be about the same. Okay? But Caleb wasn't saying, okay, I'm the man. I got this. Caleb was saying, God promised he would deliver these giants, and I believe he will, and I'm going to go and meet it head on and trust God to take care of me. That's leadership. That's faith. That's initiative. What we're going to see a little bit later on, it's either in chapter 17 or chapter 18, is Joshua finally has to look at the tribes. I think it's chapter 18, and he says, how long are you slack to possess your inheritance? Caleb was not a slacker. He was on top of things. He wanted to go and accomplish his task. He was not, you know, content to just, you know, sit around and wander or twiddle his thumbs or whatever. Caleb, that's why I say you have leadership, you have initiative, you have faith. And he really kind of set the tone for the rest of them. So if that kind of rolls us over into chapter 15, and really the next large section in Joshua chapter 15 through 22 is parting out the promised land or the portions. But who was the first tribe named to get their portion? Look with me at chapter 15, verse 1. This was the lot of the tribe of the children of Judah by their families, even to the border of Edom, the wilderness of Zin. Southward was the uttermost part of the south coast, and the south border was from the shore of the Salt Sea, and we get all of these cities and descriptions. Next week, Brother Jeremy is going to tell us in detail what every one of these cities were. And, no, I'm just kidding. I will not drag you through all of that. My point is this. Caleb stepped up and said, I'm going to claim God's promise. I want Hebron. I'll take on the Anakims with the Lord's help. And as a result, what was the first tribe to go and claim their inheritance? It was Judah. And of course, he asked for Hebron. Joshua gave him Hebron. So then the portion, he was of the tribe of Judah. So the portion of Judah then fell in that same general area. All right, I will go back to the map here. This map here has, you know, some of these areas on it, but I believe, yeah, okay, right here, like due west of the center of the Dead Sea, right? That blue blob on the right there is supposed to represent the Dead Sea. And what I'm circling right here in red, if it's big enough on the screen to see it, that's Hebron. Okay? Everything basically in that, whatever you want to call it, pink or purplish area, there, that was the general outline of the tribe of Judah. Now, the green part in the middle of it, you know, Benjamin ended up getting their inheritance inside of Judah. But when it says the wilderness of Zin, you can see it there at the very bottom, if your eyesight's sufficient to read that. But down below Amalek and Eden, it says there the wilderness of Zin. You know, that's southeast. Today, you know, that would be referred to as the Negev, the desert south of Israel, or the southern part of Israel that is desert, okay? But Hebron is what Caleb asked for. Now, you can see on this map, or you can look at your own Bible map, but in the, if you have a study Bible, but right here is Hebron. Almost due north right here is Jerusalem, okay? Jerusalem is right on the very bottom of that darker blob. I'd call it brown. You call it whatever color you want to, okay? But Hebron was due south of Jerusalem, a fair piece. Later on, that becomes significant in the history of Israel. Because after the death of Saul, when David became king, did he rule over the entire nation? No. There was 7 years where he ruled over only Judah. And Hebron was his capital. This city that was given to Caleb became David's capital. And then when he became the king over the whole united country, he said, all right, we need something else. We need a new capital. And even though Jerusalem had been given to either Judah or Benjamin right in there, they had never driven out the inhabitants of the land. The Canaanites and the old-time inhabitants still lived there, which is why David went in, conquered it, and then he made that his capital, because if I could say it this way, it was not officially affiliated with any tribe. You know, like was the intent with Washington, D.C., when they made that the capital of the U.S., they carved out some land and said it's not officially part of any other state, so it can be kind of neutral territory. But Hebron is where David set up his capital originally. Hebron is where Absalom went when he staged his rebellion, his coup against his father, and then came back up. You see Hebron mentioned many, many times. But that portion there in the pinkish, purplish, whatever color you want to call that, that whole area was given to Judah. And you're like, wow, they got a huge land area. Well, they did, but pretty much everything south of Hebron, the one city that's marked there in the green in the center is Beersheba. And sometimes Israel's referred to as from Dan to Beersheba. Dan was in the extreme north. Beersheba would have been in the far south of the land of Israel. Pretty much everything below Beersheba, you may be able to see there. Let's see if I can zoom that in anymore. I can't. But right there at the very bottom of the green section, it says Negev. If you say the Negev desert, I mean, that's how we would say it in English, but what you're saying is the desert. but Negev, you still sometimes hear about that today with modern-day Israel, but pretty much everything south of Beersheba, that's all desert. That's going down towards the wilderness of Sinai where they had wandered for 40 years down that way, okay? But so while it's a huge land area, not all of it was farmland. Not all of it was, you know, extremely useful, whether it's for animals or crops or whatever. I mean, it was useful as a barrier between them and Egypt. It would have been useful for certain things, but it was not, you know, immediately farmland. But, you know, that is the area that we're talking about. So when we talk about parting out the promised land and Caleb's inheritance, in chapter 14, we see Caleb's inheritance, which was he asked for Hebron. That was a stronghold of the giants. And he said, if God is going to do what he said he's going to do, and I believe he will, then give me Hebron. I'll set the example. I'll take the lead. I'll take on the giants. And what happened? Well, in chapter 15, you get all the description of, you know, the borders of the land of Judah. And then eventually we get a description where Caleb did in fact conquer it. Look with me down, if you will, verse number 12 of chapter 15. The west border was the Great Sea, that's the Mediterranean, and the coast thereof. This is the coast of the children of Judah round about according to their families. Verse 13, to Caleb the son of Jephunneh, he gave part among the children of Judah according to the commandment of the Lord to Joshua, even the city of Arba, the father of Anak. Isn't that interesting? It's called, Hebron was called Kirjath Arba. We saw that in the end of chapter 14. When you see a hyphenated word like that, it usually means Kirjath of Arba, or, you know, the Philistine of Gath or whatever. But Kirjath of Arba is what that means, meaning that was the city of Arba. That was what it was known for. And he was the father of Anak. And then Anak became the named one that was known for fathering the giants. But Kirjath Arba, which the name was changed to Hebron, was given to Caleb. Verse 14, and Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, Ahiman, and Talmai, the children of Anak. And he went thence up to the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, he that smiteth Kirjath Sefer, so that means Kirjath of Sefer. So of Sefer, either that was a person or that was a region. You know, like you have Bethlehem, Judah, was Bethlehem of Judah, because there was more than one Bethlehem. Okay, he says, he that smiteth Kirjath Sefer and taketh it to him, I will give Aksah my daughter to wife. So he's given an incentive to it conquer the land. We'll come back and talk about that. But my point is this. Caleb said, give me Hebron. I know there's giants there, but God will help me drive them out. Joshua said, you got it. God promised you that. You can have it. And what happened in verse 14? Caleb drove thence the three sons of Anak. Don't you hate wasting time, you know, on a project? I do. Like, oh, if I had just known this, or if I had just done this way, I wouldn't have to waste all this time doing this. Don't you hate to buy something because you thought that's what you needed, only come to find out you didn't need that part or you didn't need that piece for the project? That drives me crazy. Okay? What I see here is kind of the same thing. Caleb showed them, you should have listened to Joshua and me. You should have trusted God. You didn't have to waste 40 years wandering in the wilderness, because the very thing that was your panic point of, oh no, the sons of Anak are there, we're all going to die, and they ended up rebelling against God and wandering 40 years as a result. The very panic point was not a problem for the power of God. It was a problem for the power of Israel, but it was not a problem for the power of God. I love that aspect of it, just because it's a reminder to me. I look at things and evaluate them on how I think I can handle it. That's kind of human nature. But I have to train myself. I have to remind myself. I have to intentionally choose to think something differently. I can't handle this, but this problem's not too big for God. Caleb showed leadership. He showed faith. He showed initiative. And as a result, the tribe of Judah followed that. They got their inheritance. It was all divided out. And then they went, I think, together in groups, and they would drive out some of the people groups that are still there. And then the land was divided out, and each family had their section, and they began to enjoy the blessings that God intended for them to have. Now, here's the uncomfortable question. How am I going to live this week? More like Caleb, or more like Numbers chapter 13? Numbers chapter 13 is where the spies brought the evil report and said, you know, nope, we can't do it. The giants are too big. I mean, I know what I want to do, and I know what I usually do. I mean, I want to be like Caleb, but I'm more prone to say, oh, great, my life is over. I'm ruined. You know, everything is done as we know it. That comes naturally to our human thinking, to our flesh. We have to intentionally retrain our thinking to say, I'm going to trust God. I'm going to ask for God's help, and I'm going to go forward. I mean, God's promises are available to us. But you know, faith is a choice, not a feeling. We sometimes think, well, when I feel like I have enough faith, well, then it's time for me to move forward. No, faith is a choice, and feelings come later. And the reminder for you and me from Caleb's initiative is, it doesn't matter how big the problem it is. And it was too big for them to handle. It doesn't matter how big that is. We must choose to trust God and go forward and see God work on our behalf, even when it doesn't make sense to us. When we have the promises of God, we've got to trust the promises of God and go forward. May we be more like Caleb than like the 10 spies in the congregation with what the Lord brings across our path this week. Thank you, Lord, for your word. We want to be like Caleb. We're probably more like the congregation more times than we want to admit. But Lord, help us to be reminded of your promises and to be encouraged to trust you. And Lord, help us to be good examples to our family and to those you bring across our path, and to have opportunities for you to show your power. Well, thank you for it now in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you, and you're dismissed.